But first, it's the political junkie Ken Rudin at the beginning of another week of politics. Good morning, Ken. Good to talk to you again.
Good morning, Carrie.
If you have a question for the political junkie, here's the number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. As always, you can tweet me at Carrie NPR. Ken, of all the states that are voting on Tuesday, is Pennsylvania the one that all of these candidates really want to win?
Well, yes and no. Boy, I love how I'm so definitive with you on Monday morning.
You always are.
The thing is, because it's kind of confusing on the Republican side, there are 71 delegates at stake on the Republican side, but only 17 delegates go to the winner of the statewide on the Republican side. 54 of them will be uncommitted. So if in some fantasy world Donald Trump doesn't get the nomination on the first ballot, these 54 Pennsylvania delegates could have tremendous amount of sway because they are literally, by law, they're uncommitted. Whereas on the Democratic side, 184 delegates at stake for Pennsylvania. And right now, Hillary Clinton has a sizable double-digit lead over Bernie Sanders. So that, I mean, not that Bernie Sanders is getting out of the race anytime soon. He says he's going to be in it at least through California. But of course, these numbers don't look good for the non-frontrunners.
Ken, on the Republicans here, on that delegate thing, so these delegates, though, come out of districts where voters have expectations, right? I mean, it isn't like I know legally they're not bound, but it isn't like they're just free-floating, I'll do whatever I want. They would owe explanations back to the voters that sent them there, wouldn't they?
That's true, but think of what's going on the Democratic side with the superdelegates. There are a lot of superdelegates, members of Congress, governors, senators, party and elected officials in Colorado, in New Hampshire, in other states where they've seen their many, many votes going to Bernie Sanders, and yet they've endorsed Hillary Clinton. So they have the same kind of pressure on the Democratic side with Bernie Sanders supporters saying, how could you back Hillary Clinton? The people want Bernie Sanders. So, of course, the Trump people are trying to make the same case in Pennsylvania with these uncommitted delegates.
Yeah. Ken, if you had to identify the part of the Trump message that's really landing on receptive ears in Pennsylvania, what would it be?
Well, I mean, of course, it's always the economy. It's always the uncertainty. Every time the Obama administration points out the fact that the economy is getting better, the Dow is improving, unemployment is shrinking, there are plenty of people who just can't find jobs. And, of course, a combination of the economic uncertainty and what's going on, foreign policy and the war against ISIS, is just growing frustration. It's not endemic just to Pennsylvania. It's really most of his message. But I think what's interesting is Donald Trump is also trying to sound a little more mature. I don't know if presidential, some people are saying, because he's, you know, after last week's New York primary, it was no longer Lion Ted. It was talking about Senator Cruz and Governor Kasich, not Lion Ted. Of course, now that Cruz and Kasich have formed some kind of an alliance that was signed last night, Donald Trump is back to talking about Lion Ted.
Well, yeah, he's back to it now. And yeah. I saw a video of him over the weekend where he was mocking the idea that he had to be presidential. It was a very brief epiphany there.
So far, I mean, you know, everybody's talking about that there's new grown-ups who are running the Trump campaign. He's not making as many outlandish statements as he's made in the past. He's almost hiding from the Sunday talk shows, which, you know, I mean, you know, in many ways that's good because sometimes he says some of his nuttier things on the Sunday talk shows. But what's gotten Trump as far as he's gotten is the fact that he is unscripted. He says what it's on his mind. He doesn't do the politically correct thing, shall we say. So I mean, you know, there's no reason to have to dial back and sound more presidential.
A question for Ken Rudin. You can dial in 651-227-6000 since we're talking about dialing back, 800-242-2828. And on Twitter at Carrie NPR to Stephanie in St. Paul. Hey, Stephanie, hi.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate it. I really enjoy listening to The Political Junkie. I am an advanced placement U.S. government and politics teacher at St. Paul Central High School.
Yeah.
And I am wondering if there are any summer reading recommendations that The Political Junkie would have either for myself or if I wanted to assign a summer reading for my students that I'll see in the fall.
Good. Good question, Ken. What do you think?
Well, that's a great question. And the reason it's such a great question is because, I mean, you know, everything I've ever read, and I've been reading this stuff for a long, long time, I've never seen a year like 2016. But there is a new book that just came out, hence the term new book, and it's by a professor at the St. Louis University Law School named Joel Goldstein. It's about the White House vice presidency. And right now, while we're talking, there's no way to describe Trump and Cruz and Clinton and Sanders. But ultimately, they will pick running mates. And the conventions this summer will be very interesting to see what these two candidates do to enhance their chances of winning in November. Now, I mean, there's so many different things to read about conventions and delegates and primaries. But right now, with all the concern now, the next decision being the picking of a running mate, this book, it's called The White House Vice Presidency, The Path to Significance, Mondale to Biden. Not only does it talk about the growth of the role of the vice presidency, and of course we saw that with Dick Cheney and Joe Biden, but also what goes into deciding a running mate and what makes that palatable for the general election audience. I mean, Clinton picking Gore was you know, unheard of, because we always talk about balancing the ticket because of age-wise and geography and ideology. So a lot of things have been very interesting. It's a great book on the history of the vice presidency.
Ken, what a great recommendation. You've read What It Takes, too, right?
I have.
The classic.
I knew him pretty well. Richard Ben Cramer was a great,
so good,
great guy. And that is one of the great books. Oh. It's about individual stories about 1988 presidential hopefuls, and they're just done as separate chapters. And what I love about that book is there's no index. And if you live in Washington, everybody rushes to the index immediately because they want to see if their name is in the book.
Oh, you egomaniac.
Exactly. And Cramer refused to do that. But the portrait of especially Bob Dole, which, you know, there's so many people who see him as gruff and angry and snarling, but it's such a human portrait of such a often misunderstood guy. It's really, really a really good book, What It Takes by Richard Ben Cramer.
Stephanie, how's that? Are those two good recommendations?
No, thank you. Yeah, this sounds great.
Good.
This
and good for great. You. I love the idea of reading over the summer. The kids might not, but I do.
Right, no. They may not. So we'll give it a try. But I know they are just...
You know what's also good for Stephanie? My button puzzles on krpoliticaljunkie.com. I do scuttlebutton puzzles. Trust me, it's brilliant reading.
Just
go to my website and believe me.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, as I said, you egomaniacs there in D.C. It's huge. Yeah. Hey, you mentioned the Veep stakes. There was an interesting piece. Was it in the Times? Where
was it?
Okay, about Hillary Clinton, who might be on the list. The Commerce Secretary. No, yeah, Commerce or Housing. Which one? Perez.
Julian Castro. Oh, Thomas Perez.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah, is made that list. I found that pretty intriguing. Do you?
I did. I think the reason is because I have a feeling some people are souring on Julian Castro.
Why?
Who's their housing secretary, who's young and ambitious, and everybody's been talking about him as a potential running mate for the longest time. And maybe, and then of course we always talk about the Latino vote, and if Cruz is the nominee, which he won't be, or he's on the ticket, which he could be but probably won't be, Perez might negate that, although I don't think Hillary Clinton would pick a Latino on the ticket just because Ted Cruz is on the other side. My personal prediction, though, by the way, I mean, I change it every 2 seconds, but it's Sherrod Brown, the senator from Ohio.
Oh, yeah, because she needs to win Ohio.
Well, I don't know if it necessarily, but he's also, you know,
progressive.
He's progressive. While he has endorsed Clinton over Sanders, his views on many economic policies are pretty close to Bernie Sanders, so he would be an interesting guy.
Does she want to take the chance, though, of bringing someone in as the Veep who is immediately plotting about how he can be the next president? Doesn't she want somebody
that's interesting. That is a consideration, because there are some people who, like what the thing about Joe Biden and Dick Cheney, they were not plotting to run for president the moment they were elected, whereas some people were, other people were, obviously. So that is one of the considerations. And, of course, she is 67 years old. She would be the second oldest person ever elected president after Ronald Reagan. And if she seeks reelection, and I mean, we're talking down the line, but there are calculations whether to get somebody who's ambitious, and there were a lot of clashes between Clinton and Gore over this as their 8-year relationship went on, or you just get somebody who's a steady close number two. And plus the fact you have to weigh the fact that Bill Clinton will probably be the real ticket mate if in a Hillary Clinton presidency, and anybody who takes the vice presidency or the running mate status will have to take that into consideration as well.
Okay, here's a call from Kirk in Goodland, Minnesota. Hi, Kirk. What's your question for Ken?
Well, it was kind of interesting. You just mentioned that. It's kind of a fluff question, but I was wondering what Bill Clinton's title would be should Hillary become president. Will he be first man, first husband? You know,
I think it's a good question.
First lady.
Yeah. What would he be called, Ken?
Well, I mean, we know what a lot of people have been calling Bill Clinton over the years, but I suspect, I mean,
okay,
we've obviously never had this before. First man, first gentleman, it's very, very interesting. We're in uncharted territory here, but whatever it is, he would not be fading into the background. We know that.
Would they be calling it what? Now, what do we do? The Bushes, Bush 41, Bush. Would they call him Clinton 92 and her Clinton 2016?
Right, exactly. Well, she would be. That's right. She may be just Clinton 1, and or maybe she'd be Clinton 2. But that's right. He was 42, right? Because Bush 1 was 41, then 42, and Bush 3. You know something? I was told there would be no math on this program today. I didn't prepare.
Okay, here's your newsmaker. I'll rescue you with your newsmaker sound of the week. I know you love this.
Yes, I do.
Listen.
So is it possible another Clinton could be better than another Republican
Time
around?
It's possible.
You couldn't see yourself supporting Hillary Clinton, could you?
Well, we would have to believe her actions would be quite different than her rhetoric. Let me put it that way.
Who is that man answering ever so reluctantly?
That is Charles Koch, the billionaire Republican conservative donor who said a lot of things. First of all, he was on ABC News, I guess this week, with George Stephanopoulos, and he was answering Jonathan Carl's question about hypothetically backing Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And clearly Charles Koch does not like Donald Trump, and he doesn't like Ted Cruz either. He thinks some of their comments about Muslims and carpet bombing and immigration have gone too far, even though there are some Democrats who think the Koch brothers have gone too far. But at least on this policy, the Koch brothers think that that Trump and Cruz are just out of it. So he kind of hinted the fact, well, I could see myself maybe backing Hillary Clinton over one of these Republicans. Now, of course, I think maybe he did that to just torture Hillary Clinton, because immediately she came out with a tweet saying, oh, my God, you know, I don't want it. You know, no, it's not going to happen.
Please.
And maybe he did it to, look, there's no question that the Koch brothers will do everything they can to torture the Republicans, to torture the Democrats in November, to keep Republican control of the House and Senate. But clearly, regarding Trump or Cruz, it's clearly going to be with them holding their noses.
Ken, we should say that the Kochs have, what, pulled their financial backing out of the convention?
Well, out of the Stop Trump movement. And I think the reason is because I don't know how they're going to stop him. I mean, we did see that, you know, Cruz and Kasich have this alliance where I'll let you have, you know, after you, Gaston, I'll let you have one state or you let me have another state. But as big as this, as tomorrow's primaries are in five states, watch Indiana on May 3rd. If Trump, it's a winner-take-all state. If Trump wins all 57 delegates in Indiana, all the fantasies of a contested or open convention could end that soon.
Yeah. There was an interesting discussion on Meet the Press over the weekend where they were talking with one of the people that heads up this Stop Trump movement. And Chuck Todd was asking, why don't you, when you look at the general election polling, yes, I know it's not hard and fast, but when you look at that, Kasich does well against Clinton. Why don't you choose a candidate in your anybody but Trump? And she really squirmed on that and couldn't answer it. So why don't they, Ken?
Well, if the answer is John Kasich, hi, my name is John Kasich. I won Ohio and lost 49 of the states in the primaries. Nominate me. I mean, that's the problem. If you looked at the polls from the beginning, it was Jeb Bush who was going to give Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders the greatest fight. It was Marco Rubio who was going to be the winner, and the Republican voters didn't want him. So for whatever reason, the Republicans are not looking at who would be the strongest candidate in November. And you know something, we've seen that in the past. I remember in 1980, people said Howard Baker would be the greatest candidate against Jimmy Carter, and Ronald Reagan would be the easiest for the Democrats to beat. And Republicans didn't care because Ronald Reagan had won their hearts. And in many cases, in 2016, Donald Trump has won their hearts.
That's an interesting comparison. A last call here, Ken, from Kathy in LaPorte. Hi, Kathy. What do you want to know from Ken?
Well, this has been bothering me for quite a while. Polls. I don't understand why we are subjugated to all these polls. What kind of a question do they ask? Do they say, well, who are you voting for, and that's it? Is it a convoluted logarithm that goes on and on?
Okay.
Why do we need them?
Why do we have them? Why do we need them, Ken?
Well, you know something? I don't like them 2 years in advance because to say, for example, in 2015 that Jeb Bush was a front runner because of the polls, I mean, that was nonsensical. And even when Donald Trump was moving in the polls, up in the polls, they said, well, that's also nonsensical because the voters haven't had their say. Now that the voters have had their say, the question is more nuanced than that. It's not only who would you vote for, but what kind of enthusiasm do you have? Are you a likely voter or just a registered voter? Could you see yourself changing? I mean, there are a lot of things that could change, and certainly, you know, I suspected for the longest time that the voters' feelings for Donald Trump would change, especially when all those negative things about his past would come out. But the more things came out about him, the higher his numbers went. But for the most part, when we come close to the election, right now it really is. If it becomes Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, it's which one do you want, and what kind of enthusiasm do you have, and could you see yourself voting third party in November?
Ken, thanks as always for the political chat. We'll talk with you next Monday at 10.
Thank you so much, Carrie.